Good morning, girls and gays. Thanks for tuning into Tindergarten, a veritable show and tell of the good, the bad, and the dramatic of 21st century queer dating. I'm your host, Raksha, and class is now in session. I met Deepthi and Brinda this summer when I was interning with an LGBT group in Chennai, India. I think it might have been during your queer women's sex education workshop. While on paper we may have similar backgrounds, queer Indian young women activists, our lived experiences on opposite sides of the world vary quite a lot, which is one of the reasons I wanted to do this interview. Can you guys introduce yourselves briefly and maybe give an update on the kind of work you're doing right now or what's going on in your lives?
Sure. So I'm Deepthi, and I predominantly identify myself with Chennai. I identify as a lesbian, she, her are my preferred pronouns. I've been in Chennai for about 13 years, and that's pretty much my adult growing up life. And I've made a lot of friends. I got into the queer scene first offline and then online, and then I moved abroad for about 3 years to do my master's. Now I'm living in Bangalore with my partner, but when it comes to queer scene or doing anything or having friends in the queer scene, for me, it's mostly in and around Chennai.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Brinda. I live in Chennai, but so I was living in Chennai up until my graduation for the first 20 years of my life, and then moved to Bangalore, and I was there for about 8 years. I was there from my master's, and now I'm back in Chennai and I live here. I primarily identify as a non-binary person, non-binary pansexual person, assigned female sex at work person. So yeah, I mean, my association with the queer scene is with Chennai, also in parts nationally as well, because as a professional, as a communication professional, I work at the intersection of gender, sexuality, mental health, and technology. A lot of my advocacy work and my work itself professionally is quite national. So in that sense, I'm also connected to the queer scene nationally, but then in terms of dating, I haven't actually dated anyone online in the queer space. Mm-hmm. I hope that's good enough an introduction.
Yeah, that's great. So you said you were non-binary. What pronouns do you use?
Oh, yeah. My pronouns are she and they.
Okay, gotcha. Can you guys tell me a little bit about the queer scene in your areas?
I would say the queer scene in my life started, or the offline part at least, was I think in 2010 when I started going to Orinam. Orinam is a group in Chennai, and it's not just, it's for all the sexual minorities, and they conduct the pride events and stuff. So I had started going to their meetings. But prior to that, I had spoken to a lot of people online, who were not from Chennai. Mm-hmm. But even in that Orinam meetings, Orinam scene, it was just like less than 4 or 5 women who identify as lesbians. And so there wasn't really much to talk about. If you ask me about dating scene and the offline space in Chennai. Over the years, I think more and more women are coming out. So that's a good sign. But when I started, like 2010, 2014 and stuff, there were barely any.
So when I was there this summer, it was the 10th anniversary of the Chennai Pride Parade, right?
Yeah.
I was pretty surprised actually at how many people came out to the Pride Parade and like how many different groups seem to be doing stuff, because there's Orinam and then you guys have the queer women's group, and then
yes,
I was working with Nirangal, which seemed kind of separate, and then
there was Sahodran.
Yeah,
like in the sense, essentially, if you're looking at Pride itself, Pride is organized in Chennai by a collective called the Tamil Nadu Rainbow Collective. And there are many registered, unregistered organizations, voluntary groups, NGOs, and even individuals who are part of TNRC, right? So it is not any one group, any one individual, or any specific. There's no face to TNRC. TNRC is a face in itself. So it's a collective that takes decisions and takes calls and organizes events during the Pride Month and organizes the Pride as well. So that is in terms of the Pride. Anything else, Dipti? I mean, that's how we see it, right?
Oh, no. When you say a lot of people coming to the Pride, again, not necessarily everybody who comes to the Pride March actually turn up at other events or
are looking to date
or are queer in any sense.
Huge group of the people who walk the Pride itself are allies, right? Like last year, I don't know if you came for the Pride itself, Aksha, but there were like families bringing their children. There were little kids and all of that walking the Pride as well, along with their parents. So in that sense, not everyone who comes to the Pride may actually identify as queer even. So I'm just giving a general idea of TNRC organized it, and there are a lot of groups and people, but not everyone might come for the Pride or not everyone might come for all the events during the Pride Month as well.
Right. So, it's a very diverse Pride March in that sense. And I don't know if we can say there's a huge dating pool because there's a huge number of people coming to the Pride March. Not a very great comparison, I feel.
Okay. So what is the dating pool like, or how is it found?
I guess, like I was saying, when I look at the apps, there are a lot of people online. There are a lot of people who are looking to date. But when you say, oh, there is a social space where you can come hang out. And I see a lot of times people come for a partner, looking for a partner. And then when they find a partner, they stop coming to the meetings. We've had this before. We had the current group that we have, CQC. We had this problem in the previous group that we had. So I usually make it a point in this group to say, you can come look for partners, but don't see that as the only thing you want to do with this group.
Yeah, in fact, we very actively encourage that people actually make this a social space in terms of where they can connect with people in general and make friends than actually look for a partner, simply because it's oftentimes very common in queer spaces and community that, you know, because of the probability or supposed probability of meeting a partner being low for us, you know, the focus tends to largely be around actually getting a partner, finding a partner, than actually having friends, you know, and oftentimes that kind of leaves us hanging without actually a social space of friends to fall back on, even if you're like, you don't have a relationship or whatever. And that social network is so important. And that social network, I might not have too much to speak for, for the dating scene in Chennai, because I've not had really much experience in the queer dating scene as such, but I can speak for the social support that's there in Chennai in terms of a space for people, irrespective of whether or not you have a relationship. You know, you can make a lot of friends in the queer circles in Chennai as such. This is the space for you to, like, find people, meet people, make friends, and not feel lonely. That experience I have had.
And again, I probably would add a little bit to what Brinda had said, that you, again, need to know the right people and you need to be at the right places to get access to these spaces that they are there.
Yeah, it's not publicly accessible.
Yeah, for safety reasons, we don't market ourselves too much, advertise ourselves too much.
Deepthi, you mentioned that you use the dating apps to recruit people sometimes because you can't like publicly advertise. Can you explain more about that?
One main thing that I have in mind when I started the group with Brinda and a couple of other people was also that people need the social space. I've never had it when I wanted people to reach out to talk to. So I talk to a lot of people online, whether it's WhatsApp or dating apps, and I mainly try to understand what they're looking for. I mean, a lot of people are like straight up, okay, I'm looking for a partner. But there are some people who just need to vent out or talk to and share stuff. So I sort of gauge them on how useful an offline space would be for them. And then I pitch in, say, you know, there's this meeting. Would you want to come? Or would you want to meet online, offline somewhere? And then I'll tell them about, you know, the monthly meetups that we have. So that's sort of where I am when it comes to when I say recruitment on the dating apps.
Okay, okay. Also, we've been talking about CQC, but I don't think I've got like a full description of it. Can you explain what CQC is?
Binda, you want to take this?
Yeah, CQC is Chennai Queer Cafe. And oftentimes, queer, when we say queer cafe, people are looking for a physical location. No, it's an online space. And the reason we say cafe is because it's a social space. Usually cafes are associated with that social aspect of hanging out with people or making friends, right? So with that in mind, we said Chennai Queer Cafe. And we said Chennai Queer Cafe also because we wanted it to be a space for assigned female sex at birth people. So our group usually has queer cis women. There's other people in the spectrum as well, other assigned female sex at birth people. There are trans men, trans masculine people, gender fluid people. I myself am non-binary. So so essentially a whole safe space, social space for assigned female sex at birth people to meet and hang out once a month. Just have a social space, nothing else, no agenda. Just meet, talk, have conversations, have a good time. And just where you can be yourself, be queer, and it's safe, okay to be yourself and make friends, because that space is often lacking in queer people's lives, you know, to just be yourself and just like go for even a cup of coffee. You have to be someone else even if you're going to a cafe, right? So to have that space to be able to engage in those conversations and have light talk and whatnot. I mean, if there's anything I have missed out, feel free to add.
Yeah, so like I was saying, my main intention of starting this was the need for the social space that Chennai had lacked, for especially for queer cis women. So I mean, we've never really felt that we need to have an agenda. And I still have people ask me, is there an agenda? Are we going to talk about something? I'm like, no, I mean, if you want to talk about something, it's perfectly fine. But as a group, we don't have an agenda. And
yeah, having no agenda is in like, because oftentimes also, like we can speak anything we want, but there are also other spaces where, you know, when you're talking activism and when you're talking everything else, mental health or whatever, there are different spaces. But like Dipti mentioned now, there isn't a specific social space for people, AFAB people. So, you know, this space can be that space. I mean, this space is that space for them.
That's actually interesting, because that's a common complaint that we have here as well. Like, lack of queer women's spaces that aren't just based on dating or like a bar, so like an alcohol culture. So yeah, we had no good, like we didn't have great alternatives in Atlanta specifically, but now that I'm in New York, there's some like very purposeful spaces that are like queer women's coffee hours or like a day in the park or like a board game night that are specifically like alcohol-free meetups that you can come to with a partner or without, just to meet people. But I think that's a like common issue. People are only looking for a partner, or it's kind of a drinking scene.
Yeah, that is something that we were actually conscious of also in some sense. And that's kind of part of the queer scene in Chennai also, where we generally made to think in an inclusive way. What if a person, you know, is not into drinking, right? A, and B, drinking involves a certain kind of socioeconomic, you know, capacity or power to be able to actually access it. So even if we go for lunch or whatever, we actually find a place or we meet at a place where, which is quite nominal and fun and good. It's not very expensive. Like you can get a decent meal at $100, right? So that kind of makes it fairly affordable for most people. Yeah, that's something that we have, and we make a conscious effort at, because what you just mentioned about alcohol spaces and all that, that at least I have heard of those complaints in other cities in India, yeah, even if not in Chennai.
We've sort of been meaning to do it in a park. Like the place where we are at right now, the physical space that we do it at is not too expensive, but I mean, it's, I in my head, I would still feel there are people who might not be okay to spend 100 or 200 every time they have to step out. So we've been really meaning to do it in a park, but Chennai weather doesn't really support the fact that we meet at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, in the afternoon.
Brinda, you specifically said like the queer women's spaces are like AFAB spaces. I know that was kind of a culture shock for me coming to India, because here we have a very big, like, in our queer scene, we don't talk about like AFAB, AMAB, and it's just like queer women's space, and they're very inclusive of trans women typically. So I was really surprised by that back in India, but it seems like there are a lot of trans women spaces already, because that's a different kind of culture.
Yes.
Can you explain more about that?
For me, okay, so I have to actually talk here about my personal journey as well a little bit, because in terms of discovering me being non-binary itself has been quite a journey for me. It's been a discovery that's been pretty recent, like 6, 7, 8 months old. Like completely coming to terms with the fact that I am non-binary to be able to speak out loud in say a podcast like this, for instance. So in the sense, like you mentioned earlier, trans women, because of the cultural history of trans women in India, right? Trans women have their own social spaces that are there, right? And gay men, again, because, I mean, gay men being queer, or like men being queer, is again the thing that is most spoken about. So they have exclusive spaces as well. In terms of queer women, has always predominantly been like a, how do I put it? Very in the back, background,
yeah.
Invisible. Yes, that's the word I was looking for. It's invisible. And also, to be very honest, because of the trans culture, like trans women, I won't even say trans men, because trans men are again as well invisible. So the essentially, I won't say just trans men or like queer women, the entire AFAB spectrum is quite invisible. Usually, when you're looking at the queer spaces in India, visibly you will find gay men out or trans women out. You won't find the AFAB people very visibly out, because of the general, you know, culture of patriarchy that's there, you know, and the pressure that any assigned female sex at birth person goes through, a certain need to follow a certain kind of culture, and that trajectory of, you know, family pressure and, you know, marriage pressure and all those different things culturally that comes on them, they're usually in the background and they don't come out even to speak about. And it's very important to create a safe space for them, you know, which will, where they can actually be themselves. I know this is a little bit different when compared to what you just spoke about, queer women's spaces being inclusive of trans women. But the thing is, trans women actually have a lot more their own kind of social spaces in India than actually AFAB people do, which is why this is actually slightly different. I don't know if that makes sense.
That's a really big cultural distinction, that when I came from doing queer work in the West to like seeing it in India, that was such a huge cultural shock, that there was so much conversation around trans women already. Even the government IDs had like,
yeah,
non-binary identification and stuff. We don't even have that in the US. You can't.
Non-binary identification essentially is not, so that's a little complicated thing. Non-binary identification is different from transgender identification, and I mean, IDs are a whole different conversation altogether. I don't know if we should go into it right now, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's another complicated mess altogether, so yeah. But yes, transgender people can identify like on paper that they are trans if they choose to.
So I want to move into a segment I have called Five Swipes. And I'm not really sure how this is going to work because you're both in different cities, but maybe we can do it kind of in parallel. We can do like a back and forth. Like if you both pull out an app, then maybe Deepthi describes one thing that she's seeing and then we switch back to Brinda doing one and we do that for a few minutes.
Okay, so the experience I've already had on a dating app is OkCupid. So would you want me to get on OkCupid or on Tinder?
How does OkCupid work?
Pick something else, Brinda. I was thinking already. So
yeah, and also my experience has been on OkCupid. Oh, the thing about Tinder, I know what the thing about Tinder is. I don't have Facebook on my phone. Okay. Mm. And without Facebook on my phone, I cannot really use Tinder on my phone. Okay. So I didn't want to actually download Facebook on my phone, which is why I, in fact, decided to get on OkCupid to begin with. And also the fact that OkCupid has all this, like, really detailed thing, and they really try to profile you and then find you a match, and not just, like, randomly just swipe right and left just looking at someone's face. I mean, not that OkCupid's algorithm is going to be perfectly correct and all of that, but still, I thought that was still a better attempt for me than just getting on Tinder.
So, we can do OkCupid then for both of you. That's not one that I've done in previous episodes.
So there's a lesser known Indian-based queer app, a dating app called Delta.
Oh yeah, I've been on Delta as well.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same people, but No. Delta has a little more. It profiles, like, there's more strict regulation around who can be on there, who cannot be on there. So in a certain sense, it's a little more restricting than Tinder. I mean, I've never used Tinder, but I've been on OKC for a while now. So when I was abroad, I did create a profile on OKC, and I just wanted to, I studied in Ireland. I was there for 3 years in Dublin. And so at that point, I had gone to my college queer group meetup, and I was the only brown person there. There's not even like one Asian person as well. So I felt very out of place. I mean, they were pretty welcoming though, but I could never go again. So I thought, okay, let me try OkCupid and see if I can meet somebody. So yeah, I did get to meet one person who was from India. I met them a couple of times and then I had to move back to India. So, but here I do get on the app once a week or so and check if there's anybody new, if there's anybody whom I can pitch the idea of coming to an offline space and stuff.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
For me, my OKC experience was this is very interesting because this is also a bit about my own journey. So I got a queer journey, essentially. So I got onto OKC saying, like, so I knew, like, I think since I was 8 or 9, I knew I was queer, right? But then I just didn't, like, you don't give that a thought. If you think that you're attracted to boys, to men, then you always want to give that a thought. You just, like, put this aside and, So I did just about that till I kind of got into one wrong relationship after another, right? And it didn't work. Interestingly, also for me, the fact that it didn't work was also because I didn't fit for all cis men, I did not fit what their idea of a woman was. It wasn't until last year I realized I never fit because I don't identify myself as a woman. Back then, it was just very difficult. And I was like, you know what? Eventually, I said last year, you know what? It's time I just completely accepted that I am, in fact, queer and actually give this a shot. But before that, I said, I tried one last time. I said, I'm done meeting people through people I know and all of that. And I don't know where to meet men. So I'm just going to get on a dating app and see how it works. So I actually went online and I installed Delta and I also installed OKC, right? So I got on Delta first and I swiped and I wanted only to meet people who were actually in Chennai And then I think 20 people or something, and out of the 20 people I was there, I saw, I actually personally knew two of them, okay? And after swiping 20 people, all like, I don't know, saying no to all of them, I kind of ran out of options, and Delta said, you know what, come back later, we'll have... I'm like, what the hell is this? And then also, I don't know if it was that experience, I just quickly went ahead and I deleted the app, uninstalled it, because also, you're still coming to terms with the thing of being queer, right? You're not... So I don't know what it's like to now get on an app and like try to meet a woman or like someone who is AFAB or trans or whatever on the app. That's a new idea to me, and that kind of makes you nervous when it's your first time and you're coming to terms with the fact that you're actually queer. So I went on OKC and it was still going back to meeting good old like men that I could still like somehow manage my way around. But then even that experience was kind of mixed. Like, I had creepy experience on OKC as well, and good experience also. So
when I was in Chennai, I was also, I downloaded Her as well to there were women in the area. But yeah, it would show me like five profiles and it would say I like ran out in the area. But I got like mixed success on Tinder. Like I had met with at least one woman offline and she was really chill and that was fine. We had like a cool date and stuff, but a lot of other people, it was like girls who were married, who either wanted to like swing or experiment or something, which was really interesting. And then there were some profiles that seemed like they were maybe fake profiles.
Yeah, somehow for me on OKC as well, right? Not that I wasn't, it wasn't a scary experience because this was my first time getting on a dating app, but then somehow the idea of meeting, for me, I'm saying as a first timer, right? First timer getting on a dating app to meet anyone. For me, it seemed less scary to meet men than actually meet women because of all these, like the reason of, you know, some, I know that there are these fake profiles of like sometimes men trying to pose as women, etc. That kind of like scared me a bit and I decided to stay a little far away.
Yeah, but I've had a couple of people in the group who had decent success. Like they make sure they talk to them enough in online and they meet them in a public space. So there's all these safety stuff that needs to be done before you actually meet, especially because of these fake profiles.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I mean, everybody, like a couple of weeks back, I had this friend who was like, oh, I'm talking to somebody. And then that ended up being somebody I knew. I'm like, yeah, she's from Bangalore, moved to Chennai, nice person, go ahead. So there's a lot of this overlap in the apps and the offline space, but you have to be careful. There are a lot of fake profiles and men posing as women that is there.
Yeah, I had a couple people request for like video calls before we met up and stuff, which I thought was really sensible, things like that. So
I wanted to get on OkCupid saying that I wanted to meet men and women, but then the thing is on the app, it said on my profile that I'm bisexual and I was not okay with being open like that, right? So I put straight instead of bisexual being on my thing. It's another thing to say gay.
So I think the reason I get away with that is I have this other profile, the whole different identity I used to use pretty regularly in the Indian queer space. So I use that same profile for my OKC as well. So my profile has my picture, but it does not say, it has everything about me, but it does not say my name. So I think that's why I'm more out there with that profile versus my own name. And
so now I just got on the profile and edited it to gay, right? As we were speaking, I just did that. I changed it to gay now and looking for women. And I said, I don't want to be found by straight people, which is true.
Yeah.
Also. So, yeah. And because also it's interesting that I am right now, like I just downloaded the app. And even though I'm not actually looking to meet anyone at this point in time, last just 1 year's time has made so much of a difference that I now don't want to be, I was on this app before and I didn't want to be seen as bisexual because I was looking for both men and women. Right now, a year later, I'm like, I don't even want, it's another thing that, it's not about what my preferences are, but I don't want to be found by men at all. I'm not looking to meet men at all there, cis men at all on the app. So I'm actually okay with just saying gay and women. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here that I guess people's preferences on using an app also changes with time.
Yeah.
And their own experiences in that sense.
Yeah. And like the reasons that they use the apps and stuff. So does OkCupid show you some profiles that you get to like swipe on, or what does it, what's the interface?
Yeah, it has something called as double take, where it'll show you the profile, just one, where they're from, the age. And earlier, Brinda was mentioning about a lot of questions. And based on the questions, they understand you as a person, what your interests are. So there's a percentage there. So there are a lot of questions that you can answer 10, 100, any many of them. So the more you answer, the better they can match you with another profile. So that percentage is also mentioned. And pictures, if they upload any, where they are, whatever they've uploaded, and like a couple of lines about them, a summary of them. And on that, you can swipe left or right.
It's just strange that I'm right now looking at the app, and even though I changed it, I'm still only looking at men for some reason.
Would you want to click on the profile and see what they've marked their gender as?
Oh, do you want to just, interesting.
Yeah, so a lot of, I've seen a lot of profiles which have a man's photo, a boy's photo, and they've marked their gender as woman.
Oh, interesting. So they have said, so this guy that I'm right now looking at says man bisexual, okay? Hmm. And I have no idea why that one came up. Let's see another. Interesting. Next profile that I just saw also is man bisexual. Let me see. Oh, interesting. Again, I'm looking at another bisexual man as well. So
maybe they're the people who swiped profile before.
Wow. No, I'm just looking at, so all the men that I am looking at right now, I didn't even say that I want to meet men, right? So I said gay and women. And then it's showing me only bisexual men's profiles completely. I'm not still looking at even one woman's profile here. All of them are bisexual men.
Like, so Brinda, there's a section. There's a section in profile, right? The first one is my profile, and then the next one is my ideal person.
Oh,
you
want to
go into that section? Yeah, you probably need to
genders.
Switch
oh,
the gender.
Correct. Thank you so much. And yes, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, interesting. So now let's check if I have anyone actually there on my profile. Fine, I'm finally finding women.
Okay.
Great. Oh, the first woman I'm looking at is a bisexual married woman.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very interesting.
I guess, like, what would she be looking for, you think?
She says looking for single people for new friends. I don't know why you need to be single to make new friends, you know, to be her friend. You could be if you're looking only for a friend, right? You could still be in a committed, serious relationship and still be friends. Yeah. So, yes, I am marking her low. I'm looking at another one.
Okay.
Yeah. This one is a bisexual woman who is single and looking for people for new friends and open to non-monogamy.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting, yeah.
And the profile picture says voyeur.
Oh.
It's actually not got her picture, but it says voyeur. Oh my God, did I just like, I have a 91% match with a really close friend of mine here on this profile.
Tell me who that is later, okay?
Yes, I will.
Or if you want to say it now, it's fine.
No, I don't know if it's okay for me to mention her name. And you know her, by the way, also, Dipti. So, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a picture of her with a dog.
Ah, yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah. So you want to look at your app and tell me?
Somebody interesting from Chennai, 29, bisexual woman, single, looking for short-term and long-term dating and hookups. Interesting profile.
Yeah.
So I think I will swipe right. Might get into a conversation later.
Okay.
Oh, I got the same voyeur profile as well.
Oh, interesting.
Happy-go-lucky, intelligent, and bold woman. Folks, if you cannot communicate well, please excuse. Yes, I will excuse myself. Oh, so they mentioned sapiosexual voyeurs. Me and my partner are looking for cool-minded, classy couples.
Who? This voyeur person? No.
Yeah. Yeah, oh. Yeah. You go into the detail of the profile for a drink, wow. Maybe a drive, or just chat up. And depending on mutual comfort, married and loving couples preferred. That's something I would prefer. I think they're looking for like a couple friendship. I have no idea.
And Raksha, just out of curiosity, right? So have you had people ask you or not ask you, come up on your show? And have you found profiles like what the Dithi is talking about before when you do this?
Like married couples?
Married couple looking for other people, other couples, etc.
So I never see that here. I think because less people in my age range are married already. But when I was in Chennai, I saw a lot of married couples. So a lot of the married couples seemed kind of sketchy and like not really like what I would be comfortable with. But I'm not against meeting couples in general. I actually met this one couple who were like, they weren't married. They seemed pretty like young and chill, and they'd been dating for like a year. And I had like a drink with them, and we had talked about like me going out with them or hooking up with them or whatever. And they seemed really cool. Like I'm not anti people who are in relationships, but the married couples seemed a little like, I don't know. They seemed a little bit more like unrelatable and maybe like desperate sometimes. So I didn't meet with any married couples, but.
Okay. I don't know. Of course, your age group itself, I understand you said, you know, you don't find married couples in that age group and all of that. But it's also here in India, it's also a matter of safety, even if you are interested in trying something out, etc., to actually get involved with a married couple or anything. I mean, it's also a safety concern that's there. I don't know what sort of creates those concerns for you guys back there when you're looking at an app. Because I just looked at the app and now, and I just found the kind of profile that Dipti mentioned. It's a guy's face. Go inside and it says gay, woman. He's looking for women, like woman, gay, single is what it says in his descriptor, but it's a man.
So that becomes a very shady profile, which you just ignore or report if you have time.
Yeah.
So interestingly, the next profile I see is yours, Brinda, and we have 79% match.
Only 79%?
Oh, only 79%? That's sad. Yeah, you have only 79% match with one of your closest friends.
Yeah, maybe I need to answer more questions.
Yeah, maybe. And then you never know, the team will just have 100% match, and then I know who I'm going to be having issues with then.
Yeah, my partner is going to kick your ass.
I am not getting into that one, love. I'm not. It's actually, I'm looking at a trans feminine, trans woman here, a person, and she's looking for people for long-term dating and hookups, bisexual, uses she, her pronouns. I'm also not mentioning her name because, we might know her, but it's also what I am now realizing as well is that it's a small space, right? In the sense that you have already seen my profile. I have already seen two people I know. And then there was one profile that both of us got the same voyeur's profile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And right now, I'm looking at another profile of a woman, okay? She clearly, visibly looks married in her photograph. She has, kumkum on her forehead, like the way married women do. Mm-hmm. And it says bisexual, woman single looking for people for new friends, and then the rest is just high in myself summary. And then I don't know how OkCupid is matching and giving me an 85% match with her, but I have an 85% match with her.
They probably just answered 10 questions, and out of that, that's how it shows. Even if you've answered 85 or 100 questions, if they have answered 10 questions and that matches with the same questions that you've answered, that's how it takes the percentage. So 85, not very reliable, unless they've answered a lot of questions. You can actually see what all they have answered also.
Oh, okay. Interesting. No. But again, now the next profile I'm looking at is also, again, someone you and I both of us know.
Okay.
Who do you
have? I have my region marked as Chennai. So I'm not saying it's a huge pool in Chennai, but it's a small pool, and I also have it mapped to Chennai. You also have mapped to Chennai. There are probably about 60 profiles there, out of which 10 or 15 people we know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, but I'm just saying this. It's just very interesting.
Yeah, I don't see people that I know that often on the app.
Ah, like, very interesting.
Almost never. I mean, maybe in my college, occasionally, I would see people from my campus who I'd maybe had a class with before, but not this much.
So this is how it is invariably for, like, us. And the thing is, also, there may be people reaching out to us from other cities, etc. But then for us to, at least in terms of CQC, we have to also be careful about how we let them into our space as well. Even if there are new faces, right? Because it's quite rare that you meet people who are okay with coming out and saying that they're queer. So we have to make sure. If it was like, say, the US, the way you're saying that, you know, like many people are out and you know that you don't actually see the same faces on the app, then it's another thing. But in India, the space is quite small, limited. So it also becomes a safety issue.
Yeah. So I wanted to go into, like, kind of the impacts that you see of online dating in the scene there. Maybe what do you think are some of the benefits now that people can find each other online like this instead of traditional dating? A lot of my cousins that are growing up in Chennai still have, like, arranged marriages and are quite happy with that, like, I don't know, different rates of success with that as well. And it's so interesting that in parallel, there's also this, like, online dating culture.
To be honest, in terms of arranged marriage versus online dating, you need to also understand that although there is online dating that has come in right now, there is a space that exists in between, right? The offline dating, which has been, is not, that is what someone getting married as a result of the offline dating is what in India we would call as love marriage. So that itself has been a taboo for a very long time. And only now you, like, look at people being open to it to a certain extent. They're okay with it. And I know of people who still, even now, ensure that they get their daughters married very young so that, you know, they don't actually go and find someone that they want to get married who's out of their caste, etc. We need to understand this also in terms of understanding your arranged marriage space and online dating space. This is a pocket that exists. This is offline dating. And when I say offline dating, people meet, they go to college with, and they date someone there, they find someone there, and someone
else. Or through mutual friends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know, online dating, yes, but there's this pool also that is there where people meet people. And that space is a large space in India.
Yeah, when it comes to, like, bigger cities, yeah, but smaller cities, there still is the concept of arranged marriage. And like Brinda was saying, making sure they get married somebody who is from the same caste, from the same religion, all that. But I think when it comes to online dating, especially in the queer space, I want to point out the number of safety issues that have come up when it comes to men going on these apps. There's a lot of people who got extorted and, you know, shamed and robbed and stuff like that. But I don't know if it doesn't happen with AFAB and cis women, or they're not okay saying things out. But safety is, for me, at least in my head, when I think of online dating for queer women, safety comes first for me. Yeah. And fake profiles, and it's scary.
Yeah.
Because I see a lot of these happening to men, and they're like, do I go to the cops? But I don't want my family involved if I go to the cops. I mean, now at least the law is not, law is on our side. But before September, it was even more scary. You can't go to the cops because they will accuse you of being gay and, you know, having sex, and then they can charge you as well. So that was a mess. Doesn't get any easier because there's still people who would shame you for being gay, and they'll threaten you to, you know, report you to your parents and extort money. So that I've heard a lot of that with men. So
God, that's so terrifying. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And like two things here with respect to what Dipti said. I have, like, although I have not dated, being in these, like, when I was still on Facebook, etc., in these groups, secret groups, etc., queer spaces like that, I have seen one or two queer women's profiles come up and the word getting around, and, you know, that this particular woman has been, like, taking money, saying that I'm in love, etc., and, like, extorting money from other women. So I have sort of heard of those cases happen as well, so that, you know, to get the word out so that the other women are sort of wary of this particular person if she comes and talks to you, etc. So that has happened one or two times, or come up, seen those profiles as well. One. Two is in terms of extortion, which men face, right? Till 377 was still valid in the country, or like had not been read down. What they did not know, queer men did not know, was that, so the way the IPC is designed, if someone threatened to file a case against you using 377, they can be taken to court, or you can file a complaint against them using another section of the IPC, saying that they're threatening to, you know, put you in jail using 377. Because, so the idea of that other clause was to say that someone is questioning your modesty, or like it was so looked down upon to use 377 that you can actually feel insulted. It's like suing the other person, saying that this person is threatening me against him. So although that sort of culture has shifted now, that could have still been used if someone threatened. But most queer men in the kind of situation that they were in, and also going to police itself is so dangerous or like scary, that they were not aware of it, and even if they were aware, were not like willing to use that option.
So since homosexuality has been decriminalized in September, do you think things have actually changed in the mindset of people like accusing of homosexuality, or the way that police are interacting with people, or anything?
Movies have been coming out both regionally and nationally, one, which is a very, very good thing, because now they are speaking about queer issues. More importantly, queer women are coming out in media. Like they are, their stories are being told, which is very important, A. B, a lot of queer women couples and AFAB couples have come out and gone to the police saying that their parents are threatening them. And courts in the country, like Supreme Court as well as the high courts in the country, have actually passed, given orders now saying that families cannot hold these people back or like threaten them in any way. So those orders have come out. So essentially this verdict now has opened the space up for queer women and other AFAB people to come out and claim their space in terms of being queer. That has definitely happened. Whether mindsets have changed in a very big way or not. And media, of course, is playing a role, because mainstream films are covering these issues, even if not to a great extent and not in the right way, they're at least starting to talk about them.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big deal even here for South Asian queer people when the Sonam Kapoor movie came out.
Yeah.
the queer South Asian group here in New York, because I had just moved here. They hosted, like, they posted something on Facebook that they were hosting an event. So they sold tickets only to, like, queer South Asians or people who are in the Facebook group, kind of. And right. It was crazy. Like, everybody was there and, like, so fully present in the movie. Like, everybody cried together. Everybody was, it was, because it was surreal. Even here, seeing, like, South Asian movies, like, movies coming out of India where you can actually see that was, feels really different. Already, I don't know.
Yeah, I think movies can definitely change the mindset, because mindset, I mean, what Brinda was saying about, you know, AFAB woman going to the cops, but the cops still say, oh, this is not Tamil culture. They still, some of them still have that perspective, and this, they still go on those lines. So cultural shift, I think, might take decades, but movies definitely are helping, and women coming out and their cases going to the court and getting a good verdict from the court, and that getting into mainstream media is definitely helping. Yeah,
I think it, like, reduces stigma over time, for one thing, but also it changes, like, the power dynamic once the, even if the people aren't practicing it, when the formal law is on your side, it
right.
changes people's ability to interact with it, or how much people can, right, like, extort them or, like, pursue criminal case against this stuff. It's like the dynamic completely changes.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah.
If it's not too personal to ask, what are your families like about your queer activism or whatever?
So I've not come out to my parents, but I had a lot of marriage pressure, maybe like about 5 years back when I was 29 and stuff. I mean, that's always been there right after college, since right after college. But I'd kind of pushed it. But then it peaked when I was like 29 or so. So then I had come out to my aunt and my uncle. So they kind of handled the situation. And there still is that question once in a while. Do we look for a guy for you? Then I'd say, no, I'm still not interested. But I've not, like, come out to my parents yet.
Okay, for me, I actually have been working in the space, right? Like, I've been professionally involved for a couple of years. I began working in the SRHR space, sexual and reproductive health and rights space, as a communication professional, journalist, marketing professional. So initially, to begin with, it was seen as work, as an activist. So you were working for the rights of other people, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, for me, I had to assert and state at some point, no, even I'm queer. So I had to repeat that a couple of times before that kind of fully got registered. But because for me, my uncle is just my family is just my uncle, my paternal uncle. He's cool with it. Cool meaning he's open. He's also a huge reason why I do the kind of work I do. Also, he's a very inclusive person. He's not averse to it. He knows my partner and has a very warm relationship with my partner as well. So in that sense, it's actually, he's quite happy and actually very proud that I do the work I do.
That's great. So my immediate family here knows, but then when I was coming to India to do queer work, I had no idea what my extended family would be like. And I also never told them that I was doing queer work because I'm queer. I think they assumed it was something like my westernization or something. Like, my mom's side of the family would be pretty chill. They tend to be pretty, like, modern and, like, have gay friends. And my uncle had, like, a coworker who transitioned. But my dad's side of the family, I would never even. Whew, I don't even, like, I don't think they could wrap their head around it. I think that they're still wrapping their head around that I date.
Arranged.
I mean, at all. So, I don't know. Mixed bag there. I don't know when, if that'll ever be my problem to have to fight with them, or if I can just be like, okay, you guys are so far away and unrelated to my life, it just doesn't matter. So
it takes a while to get in that space where you're like, I don't care if you know, you don't know, I don't care what you say. It takes a while to get that space.
Right.
So one of my very early experience in the queer space was, of course, online. So that I think was 2008, 2009, around that time. So that's the time of Yahoo chat rooms and Orkut. And I don't know if you know, Raksha, there's this website called After Ellen. After Ellen, After Elton.
No, I'm not familiar.
Okay. 10 years back. So I, after Ellen was one of the first, it was like a forum where I had a blog and they had chat rooms and stuff. No, they didn't have chat rooms, but they had where you can post a story and there would be comments on that. And there's like a blog and there's a news section. So I was on that and I was looking for Indians on that space. So I had literally 7 profiles on that space. And only 3 are like relatively active. So I think one person was, like 4 of them were in US and the rest were in India, but not active at all. So I did date somebody from there for about 6 months or so, long distance, and not a very good experience. No, it was pretty traumatic, and it took months for me to get over the whole thing. I had met them, but again, not a very good experience. So that's when I started going to the meetings, the offline meetings, and I had met people there on and off dating in the offline space. After that, I've never really looked at dating somebody like from an app or from a website. It was always through mutual friends or mostly on Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so interesting that both the times you talk, so you mentioned when you were in Dublin and went to queer spaces, and right. Now when you were online and had that queer space, how it was so hard to find Indians. That's like, right. That's like the big struggle of my queer life here. It's either I'm in a queer space and it's like predominantly non-Indians, and then, or I'm in an Indian space and then it's like predominantly nobody wants to talk about queer stuff and like nobody's really that comfortable or open with that. And it's always like I have to choose one or the other. Actually, only very recently in my life, now that I'm in New York, since the past 6 months, that there is actually South Asian queer spaces here, and they do like movie nights and they do like culture talks, and there's like an actual community here for the first time in my life that I can have both.
Speaking of that duality that you just spoke about, recently I traveled to New Zealand for a conference on it's the largest queer conference in the world. Okay. It happens every 2 years, and it was like unicorn land, unicorn, queer unicorn dreamland, okay, because it was like everyone around there, and New Zealand is one of the most forward countries, open countries with respect to queer rights. Like, I met a queer woman who migrated to New Zealand 20 years ago, okay, and because her girlfriend back then was Kiwi, was someone from New Zealand, okay? Mm-hmm. And you didn't have to be married even then, 20 years ago. You just, your girlfriend just had to be someone who was from New Zealand, and you could migrate to New Zealand just because your girlfriend was from there. That's how open that country is. So it was an absolutely fabulous experience for me, because it was actually finally a space where I could just be myself and not worry so much, and that experience itself was something, because it's something I've never experienced before in my life. And there were open conversations happening about one's sexuality, and there were no judgments, and it's like there was a lot of space to think out loud about a lot of things that you would like to ask yourself, right? Not because, how do I put it, oftentimes in India we're not allowed to ask these questions to find out for ourselves, you know, what, who we really are, or what our preferences are. Am I really monogamous? Am I really heterosexual? You know, am I really a man or a woman, in the sense a cis man or a cis woman? Like, maybe I'm polyamorous. Maybe I am pansexual, or like I am homosexual or bisexual. And maybe I am non-binary, or I'm trans, and my gender expression is different. So you don't have that space in India, but being in a queer space like that, if you had any doubts for yourself to question that, you had so many realities from around the world that you could cross-check with, you know, and see and compare your reality with it and see if there's something to learn from there. And I visited a lesbian library. I can't even say a lesbian library. That would be an inappropriate word. If I am not wrong, it was women who are oriented towards women. a library run by women, oriented towards women, and it was established in 1993. So they have essentially all queer literature that you can, I think, from around the world that you could possibly find. If they had movies, DVDs, books, magazines, it was really, really nice. And the place was open because we were there during the Pride month there. Of course, the Pride didn't happen because of the Christchurch incident. The whole place was so full of rainbow colors and rainbow all over the place. The funniest thing was seeing a board outside an Indian restaurant in New Zealand saying Happy Pride, right? And I was like, I wish Indian restaurants would say this back home in India also.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was such a shock to me. Looking at that was something. It was some experience, really, the whole thing.
New York has a bit of that, but I went to college in the South, which is like predominantly Christian and like very vocally Christian and like pretty like politically right wing and pretty politically conservative. So we didn't have anything like queer hangout spaces or whatever. Like we had some in the college, but like, I don't know, it was weird in high school and college. And now New York is like, it's like being in New Zealand. Like I come and there's so much stuff that you never even thought about. Like I was at the LGBT center here last weekend. They did a program for queer parents who have children under 8 years old. They can all bring them to this like play day where all the kids get to play together and all the queer parents get to meet each other and like socialize. And I was like, I would never have even thought of that. Like even in the South here in the United States.
But the other reality also, right? When we think or talk about queer families or LGBT families, say in this conference, there was just like this two different spectrums, right? Someone who was originally from Australia running an organization to do with LGBT families. And she, to me, when you're talking about LGBT families or queer families, in the first instance, the way I identify with it, I identified as family members of a person who is queer. But for them, for her, it was a queer couple, like a gay couple or a lesbian couple having kids and having a family. So that's how far apart our realities are. We're still dealing with coming out to our families, let alone like actually having a family of our own. We're still dealing with the situation of coming out to our families. And their realities have actually moved forward to an extent where their reality is also as valid as ours, right? I'm not negating that. But to say that when you're talking about a queer family, you're talking about a queer couple having kids, that just almost seems like an impossibility right now for me, like for any of us here in India, so far away.
But there is a couple in... I personally know of a couple in India, a lesbian couple in India, Bombay. They've recently adopted a baby boy.
Yeah. I'm aware of that.
It's becoming a reality now, but it is definitely hard to imagine.
Yes, because that also is only because they're a lesbian couple. Adoption in India is an option only available to women, right? Single women who are not married.
Yeah.
It's not an option available to men. So unless gay men can adopt, becomes legal, a gay couple rather, we cannot look at single men adoption becoming legal in India, right? So then again, queer families again is in that sense quite far-fetched.
That's interesting about the men, single men can't adopt.
Yeah.
So the space that you were talking about for parents, I would never have thought of having a space for parents who have queer kids. Because in India, we're still struggling and having a space for cis women. And I would love to see a space which is for parents who have queer kids in the sense like who have kids who are like 20, 25, come out to them and they bring them to these groups. So we've had on and off meetings like that, but there's no PFLAG kind of stuff in India, which I think is the need of the hour at the moment.
The event that I went to was the parents are same-sex couples and then just all their kids under 8 years old. But then, there's also things like PFLAG, which is for parents of queer people to have like their own support group and talk about that and learn from each other.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where our realities are different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
where we're still struggling to come out to our families about being queer, and whereas in the West or like other places,
we'll get there.
They
we'll
are having there. Family. Yeah, we will get there, but it's going to take a while. I hope not.
India is making progress by like leaps and strides. I feel like every time I look, there's more communication about the topic. It's becoming more like more people are comfortable with it. More conversations are happening. And it's like, it feels like it wasn't happening for so long. And then suddenly there was a big jump or something in the past couple of years.
Again, it's a different thing that you see in the online space and the offline space. Offline conversations are just getting very, very awkward with the elections and all that
yes,
stuff.
Yes, I was just thinking election.
First off.
I was just thinking election.
Let's not go there.
Yeah. I mean, especially having just finished elections, like just having voted like 2 days ago, right? And then finding out from like friends and family and people we know who they voted for. And just finding out the kind of, it's like people you would think would be liberal are actually not that liberal and have not voted for people who want liberal things, policies for everyone, be inclusive of everyone is so shocking that it actually is quite worrying, to be very honest. Okay, if it is going to be a very conservative government that comes up. Forms the government, forms the next government, it is going to get very, very, very difficult. Why? Because we need to understand that issues in India are very, very intersectional. They're not like one independent of the other. There's religion, there's caste. So LGBTIQA plus community are also at the fringe, right? We are also a fringe group, and there's intersection. This is just one of our identities. Right, one of our many identities. Right. We are so many other things. And this, the government that comes up as a result of this election is going to affect all our other identities, even if we have been, homosexuality as such has been decriminalized. So then say, suppose a person is Dalit, right? The way a Dalit trans, suppose they're also trans, the way a Dalit trans person would be treated might be different from an upper caste, say a queer person coming out would be treated. So those differences also have to be thought about when we're looking at, have things really changed or not, or are they likely to change? Because it's not very simple black and white here in India.
But I do agree with the part where you said that in terms of queer space, there is a lot of improvement, whether it's conversations or whether it's movies. But then on the flip side, there is a huge right-wing thing that is coming up that might be problematic.
Yeah.
But I think the legalization was a huge step.
Thank you guys so much for making the time. And like, I'm glad we could coordinate from three different cities and time zones like this. Thank you
sure,
so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Yes, thank you for this lovely conversation. It was lovely talking to you.
If you enjoyed this week's episode, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TindergartenPod. Thank you to Supermarine for making our music. To hear the complete track and more, find them on Spotify. And thank you to Kevin Shunblum for our graphic design work. Find him on Instagram at kev.bot. Until next time, class.